It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, Fatal Flora. I'll talk with photographer Molly Wood about taking stunning pictures of poisonous plants. But first, the strange but true story of an Iowa murderer and an audio drama inspired by his life. Steve Wendell spent 31 years working as a counselor at the Anamosa Penitentiary. During his time there, he became fascinated with the history of the prison and its inmates. He helped to found the Anamosa Penitentiary Museum and website, and now he's brought one of the most captivating stories to life through an audio drama produced for the Voice of Jones County website. And Steve Wendell is with me now. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
What did you do at the prison? What was your job at the Anamosa Penitentiary?
I was a case manager there for 31 years. I had responsibility for managing a caseload of about 100 inmates from start to finish, managing their intake, when they left, their interviews with the parole board, all the paperwork that goes along with bureaucracy. That was my world for 31 years.
You became really fascinated with the history of the prison. And anybody who has seen the Anamosa Penitentiary, I think, finds it to be a really intriguing building. For people who haven't seen it, can you describe it for us?
Well, think of a medieval castle. That's what everybody always says when they first lay eyes on it. You crest the hill on High Street right by the Jones County Courthouse, and all of a sudden, this monstrous rock pile looms into view, which absolutely takes your breath away. It has 30-foot limestone walls quarried from local quarries, crenellations along the top, turrets just like a castle would have. It's a very, very imposing place.
But not a very inviting place.
Not at all. And it wasn't designed to be. The design was to be a deterrent, to be a to give a sense of awfulness, really, that you wouldn't really want to come and live here for any length of time, if at all. So that's what their goal was, and I think it succeeded for nearly 150 years.
Absolutely. When did you first start looking into the history of the prison? I mean, it sounds like your job would have been stressful and probably pretty difficult, time-consuming, consuming a lot of your thoughts, but you kept thinking about the prison in your off hours, too.
We did, and by we, I'm referring to a psychologist at the prison at that time named Dick Snavely. Dick had acquired a few, this was in the mid-90s, he had acquired a few old photos of the place, which he shared with me. And we both suddenly realized that they were fascinating to both of us. And so we spent some time trying to acquire more. And they suddenly started turning up from all nooks and crannies in the institution. The wardens even got into the, they would give us stuff that they would find in their closets. And before long, we had quite a collection. The more we did, the more we wanted. And the more we wanted to share it with the rest of the employees in the institution and with the wider public, which this podcast that I'm doing now is the latest iteration of that.
What captured your imagination in those photographs? Can you remember one or two that really sucked you in?
I'm a history buff, so anything that's old just automatically grabs my attention. And when I saw the institution with the wall not built yet and the perimeter created by a stockade fence, that is just such a stunning departure from what you see now that one in particular has always grabbed my attention.
It started with photographs, but then that led you to looking into stories of the history.
Dick and I made a good team. Dick was very interested in the architecture. He was interested in the nuts and bolts. He was interested in the dates. I was very interested in the stories then that started to flow out of these photos. You would want to know what happened in this photo or that photo. Old newspapers were a great source of information that way. And so I started doing research on the story part. And so together, we had this kind of synergy thing where we would present the whole picture.
thinking about doing that research in newspapers and the work that you were doing inside the prison, where you really got to know prisoners as individuals. I mean, you know that there's a pretty big disconnect between crime reporting and the individuals involved in a crime. So as you were researching these stories, how did you think about what you were reading and the real men that were being described?
Well, that's always been a bit of a pet peeve of mine in that, having worked in an institution, you know, the way Hollywood, for example, portrays prisons, it's very difficult for me to watch a prison movie because they get it wrong almost all the time. The fellas at Anamosa, like any prison, are just human beings. They've made terrible mistakes in some cases. And that's what came through during the research, too. You know, you realize how little things have changed over 100 years, 150 years. Human beings are still human beings.
Have you ever felt that there's a danger of romanticizing some of the inmates? I mean, we're going to talk here about the story that makes the basis of your audio drama. It describes an incredible character, but he was also a murderer.
He was.
So is there a danger there of romanticizing these men?
Yes, there is, and it's one that is at the forefront with every podcast that I've created. He had a real victim. She died. She died at the age of just a few days shy of her 22nd birthday. It was a horrible event. And yet, what happened after that is still real, just as real as the murder. So you don't want to stop. You want to tell the whole story. And that was my goal with the Hortman story.
What was the first story that really captivated you, that made you want to dig deeper and find out about the people behind these headlines?
Oh, that had to be the boy lifer from Clayton County. Back in 1889, John Wesley Elkins killed his parents in their sleep when he was 11 years old. He was convicted. He was given a life sentence and sentenced to Anamosa. When he came into the institution at age 11, he was 74 pounds, 4 foot 7 inches tall. No one could believe that he had done such a thing, but he had. The evidence was clear. And he ended up spending 10 years there before he was pardoned by the governor. Just a startling case. I mean, you would not see the commingling of such a young person in an adult institution these days.
It'd just be unheard of.
Exactly. A child, exactly. So he grew up in prison. That was the first, the story that really got me going on the story aspect of things.
What happened to him after he was pardoned?
He went up to the cities, Twin Cities. He worked for the railroad up there for a number of years. He actually got he did some college work at Mount Vernon at Cornell. And he eventually moved out west to the West Coast. He married a Hawaiian girl. And he was a chicken farmer for the rest of his life in Fontana, California, and he died and he was buried out there. Never got in trouble again, as far as we know, for the rest of his life.
Huh. What got you interested in podcasting? That's a fairly big leap from the work that you were doing.
It is, but I've always been a little interested in dramatic presentation, in making these stories come to life. That's the thing. I mean, this Hortman story has been in text format on the website for years, but it languishes there. It's a story buried in an obscure website. Nobody goes to it, very few anyway. So my interest in getting this story out there again in the retelling of it, it had to have a different format. And when podcasting came along, This American Life was an inspiration to me, how they mixed music and sound effects and different voices to create this drama. I was hooked, and I thought these stories would lend themselves to that, at least some of them.
And this podcast lives on the Voices of Jones County website. Tell me a little bit about the Voices of Jones County.
And it is Voice of Jones County.
A Voice of Jones County. Yes.
Voices will get you some other website, I think, or probably a 404 link. At any rate, it's a effort by local folks in Jones County to create a space on the web for all things Jones County. They aggregate photos, videos, sound clips, church services, anything they can think of. And they had actually approached me, Scott Worling with that organization, to see if I had any content that we might be able to present. And at that time, this whole podcasting thing was kind of floating around in my head, and I thought, good fit, let's do this.
So we're going to dig into the story here after a break, and we're going to hear a little bit of your audio drama. But how did you decide how you wanted to present it? I mean, there are so many podcasts out there, so many true crime podcasts out there, but you really wanted to bring this story to life.
I did. I do the research. I research it as thoroughly as I can, and then you just have to decide on a tack, what kind of hook you want to put into the thing. You don't want to fabricate things, but I was quite truthful in the Hortman podcast. He left behind no writings to indicate what was going on in his head. All I could do is infer from 30 years of his behavior at the institution how he had evolved as a person. And so that was my presentation. So I call it a based on true facts, but I did take dramatic license because obviously I did not know what was going on in his head at all times.
Were there still rumors about Harry Hortman at the penitentiary? I mean, was this still a story that people talked about when you were working at the penitentiary?
By that time, time had erased it. However, his nickname in the institution was Snap. No one knows exactly how he got that. But the reformatory athletic team was renamed the Snappers shortly after his death. Actually, I think it might have been before his death. And it remained the Snappers all the way into the 60s, 70s.
So that lived on.
His legacy lived on.
All right. Well, we're going to find out about Harry Hortman in just a moment. He murdered his girlfriend in 1901 and was sentenced to life at the Anamosa Penitentiary. History buff Steve Wendell has brought that story to life with a new audio drama produced for the Voice of Jones County website. And we will continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in a few minutes, I'll talk with photographer Molly Wood about taking stunning photographs of poisonous plants. But first, we're talking about a strange but true story that took place in Iowa just over 100 years ago. It's the story of murderer Harry Horton. And with me to share that story is Steve Wendell. Steve Wendell spent 31 years working as a counselor at the Anamosa Penitentiary. During his time there, he became fascinated with the history of the prison and its inmates. He helped to found the Anamosa Penitentiary website and museum. And now he's produced an audio drama for the Voice of Jones County website that tells the story of Harry Hortman. And we know that Harry Hortman comes on the scene as a murderer. This is when people first hear about him. In 1901, he shot his girlfriend. He lived in Cherokee, Iowa. Tell me a little bit more about what we know about that time.
Well, we know that Harry was a rather aimless, partially employed delivery driver for the most part. Very hard-drinking young man. In fact, that was probably his downfall. The one bright spot in his life was his girlfriend, Florence Porter. She was highly respected, beautiful. He coveted her a great deal, but she saw the handwriting on the wall with his drinking and his irresponsibility, and she was determined to end the relationship. So he decides to he borrows a revolver. He goes to confront her about her decision, and they argue. She breaks away from him. She runs down an exterior staircase of the building where she worked, and Harry shot her twice.
She did not die immediately.
She did not. She suffered bullet wounds, a bullet in each lung, and she lingered for 8 days.
And during that time, she was able to share her side of the story.
She did. She actually, news reporters, she actually granted an interview. And from what would be her deathbed, she publicly forgave Harry. She said that he was a good man, but she knew that he had been drinking. He wouldn't have done it if he hadn't. I think her exact quote was, I do forgive Harry, as I myself would like to be forgiven.
You brought her story to life in this audio drama. You and tell me what her name was. Florence Porter, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And an actress portrays Florence Porter. Why don't we listen to a little bit? And just to review, this happened in 1901. Harry Horton was charged with first-degree murder of Florence Porter. In a jealous, drunken rage, he tracked her down with a gun. And this is from the audio drama. There's a little bit of a spoiler in the name of your audio drama, From the Gallows to the World Series. Let's listen.
I went to the front door of the restaurant and collapsed. The doctors say my wounds are very serious. Each lung was pierced by a bullet. There is a chance I may die. But that is not for me to know. Only our Lord has that answer. Someone asked if I could ever forgive him for what he'd done to me. I do forgive Harry. He wouldn't have done it if he had not been drinking. He was always very kind to me when he wasn't drinking. I forgive him, as I hope to be forgiven.
So it's just a snippet from the audio drama From the Gallows to the World Series. Tell me about writing this script. What sources did you pull from? Obviously, this is a fictionalization of this true story.
Exactly. The local news accounts, you know, one of the beauties of the internet in this day and age is that you can access old newspapers without having to go through reels of microfilm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had access to a lot of the original accounts of what happened, including that quote that we just heard.
How long did you spend writing this script?
Oh, a couple days. I had in mind the direction I wanted to go with it, and then sometimes when you have that, it just flows.
And how did you find the actors, the voices?
Oh, well, that depended on the voice needed. I needed a good judge's voice. Scott Werling, who does a lot of athletic announcing in the Anamosa area, has the perfect voice for that. Later in the podcast, there is the voice of the warden. So I just asked the current warden at the time, Bill Spurslagy, if he would fill that role, and he graciously agreed to do so. My son had a role in it, so I used what I thought was a good fit and what I had available as well.
Now, back in 1901, when this crime was committed, most often a murderer would be sentenced to death and hanged.
As he was originally sentenced, he was supposed to be hanged at Anamosa in March 1903. Because of a legal technicality, he was given a new trial. The Supreme Court overturned his verdict. He returned to Cherokee for trial number two. I understand that he was within one vote of being returned with that same death sentence, but the jury continued to deliberate, and gradually, one by one, the vote was for life instead of the death penalty. So when he returned with a life sentence.
So, and at that point, that meant that he would spend his entire life there. We know that
exactly.
Life sentences don't always mean that someone will spend a life in prison. He really seemed to build a life for himself in prison. He was a very young man when he went there.
He was indeed, and his behavior in prison, sustained over 30 years, was so remarkable. He never had a disciplinary write-up of any sort, major or minor, and he built a resume, if you will, of prison accomplishment that was just amazing right from the very beginning, almost as though he used that moment when he was returned with that life sentence as a pivot point. This is the direction now that I want my life to go. I want to redeem myself or to atone, even if it has to be behind 30-foot stone walls. Although I don't know that that was his motivation.
It's impossible to know.
You can't know for sure, but that's the direction we took with the podcast.
So tell me more about what we know about his time in prison. I mean, he seemed to, at least according to your drama, to become sort of the center of the social life in that prison.
Well, and I don't know if social life is right. He was naturally pretty quiet. He suffered from tuberculosis. In fact, the warden at the time, when he was still under death sentence, the warden at the time thought there's a good chance he may not meet his executioner. He's going to die of natural causes before then. But he was a nurse in the prison hospital. He led the prison band.
A nurse with tuberculosis. That doesn't really seem like a very good idea.
Exactly. But I'm not sure if that was before or after his own illness. But he was considered to be an excellent nurse, very sympathetic, very nurturing. He led the prison band. He learned how to play the clarinet. He did that for a period of time. He coached the prison baseball and football teams for many, many years. He was a compositor for the prison newspaper. In fact, he became so invaluable to the warden at the time that in 1907, when the prison transitioned from penitentiary status to reformatory status, and they bundled up all the lifers and sent them to Fort Madison because that was no longer consistent with being a reformatory, a young man's reformatory, they kept one lifer back, and that was Harry Hortman. He did not go to Fort Madison. He was kept at Anamosa because of his, I assume, his service to the institution, how valuable he was.
The warden wanted him there.
That's exactly right.
We, of course, can't get inside those relationships, but how would you describe his relationship with the warden from what you think in your imagination and from the sources you've looked at?
He served under five wardens, and by all accounts, he was the go-to guy. If the warden needed some help presenting a new initiative or a new program or something like that to the institution, they would usually enlist his help because he had credibility with the other inmates. He was considered to be kind of a mentor to new men coming in, and he just had a lot of respect. And that's the coin of the realm in prison. If you've got that, you've got quite a bit. So he had the respect not only of the inmates but the staff. He was Anamosa's first citizen for a lot of years.
Let's listen to another little piece from your audio drama. This is, of course, from the audio drama From the Gallows to the World series. In 1932, the Chicago Cubs were set to play the New York Yankees in the World Series, and this scene depicts Hortman's reaction to the news that the warden is going to go to the World Series with his son.
The warden and I usually talk baseball when we see each other, and that time was no different. We agreed that the Cubs were likely to end up in the World Series, and we were both so excited at the prospect. The warden then told me that he had already decided that if the Cubs made it to the series, he was going to take his boy, Charlie, to Chicago to watch. I wished him well, but I must admit I had to fight off a certain envy. My God, I would give anything to be able to see a big league game. Just one. I told the warden that if I ever got a chance to see the series, I think I'd be ready to die.
Just a moment from the Gallows to the World Series. And apparently that conversation, fictionalized though it is, that conversation with the warden led to the warden deciding to take this murderer, who was in prison for life, with him and his son to the World Series. How did that happen?
And it would never happen today.
No. And it, I mean, I cannot believe that even in 1932 that it happened.
And it happened at absolutely the wrong time because we were in the middle of the Great Depression. And even honest folks were having trouble finding enough money to eat in many,
right,
much
let
less.
Let alone go to exactly. Chicago to see World Series games.
And plus, Iowa was about to, was in the midst of a gubernatorial campaign. Within a few weeks, we would be electing a new governor. So politically, this could become a political football as well. So there was just a lot of good reasons not to do it. But Warden Ireland... I think he thought of this as a way to repay a debt, that the Hortman had spent 30 years of service to many wardens in the institution, and he wanted to repay that debt. He knew that Hortman's health was deteriorating, that he didn't have much longer to go, and he considered it the compassionate thing to do, and he was willing to take that risk, and he did.
Tell me about the logistics. How do you take a prisoner to the World Series?
Well, the warden took his personal car and expended no state funds. The inmates in the institution, from what we understand, took up a collection for Harry. They were probably as excited as he was at the prospect of him going to the World Series in Chicago. For Harry, this was the pinnacle. So they used the warden's car. The warden had a driver, an inmate driver. So he went along. He was a given anyway. He was the driver. And I think they took one or two businessmen from town, too, that were friends of the warden's son, Charlie, and then Harry. Harry, you know, I think of that trip from Anamosa to Chicago in Rip Van Winkle terms, the sleeper who has come to life.
Right. He's been in prison for 31 years.
Exactly. And when he came in, horse and buggy was the norm. And now all of a sudden he has vehicles whizzing by him inches away on the highway at what must have appeared to be breakneck speed. It must have been sensory overload for him from Anamosa to Chicago.
And he saw legendary baseball played.
Oh, my heavens, he did. It was October 1st, 1932. The Yankees already had a two-game advantage in the World Series. So then the venue switched to Chicago. And the Cubs would eventually lose both of those games. They got swept out of the series. But that first game, he saw Babe Ruth's famous called shot. In fact, a good friend of mine and author Tom Wolfe has a book coming out this spring from University of Nebraska Press entitled The Called Shot, in which Harry Hortman and Warden Ireland's journey is documented as well. So, he saw that game. Also in attendance on that particular day was a man who would soon become President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And there was also a young boy in the stands. He would become a Justice of the Supreme Court, John Paul Stevens. So he was in heady company there in the stands.
Absolutely. Now, how did this come to light?
Tom did a lot of research into that. Tom is a meticulous researcher, and he actually read a paper on the Hortman case at Cooperstown at the Hall of Fame some years ago at a symposium, and so I got some of that from his research.
When the warden and Hortman returned to Iowa, there was quite a bit of political fallout because of this journey. What happened?
Well, there was political hay that was being made. Investigations promised, and it turned out to be kind of a tempest in a teapot. In that, it all blew over. The warden kept his job. There were no ramifications. After all, it did go very smoothly. There were no incidents whatsoever. He was returned safely to the institution. It just all blew over.
Hortman died shortly after this trip.
And actually, the warden died even before Hortman did. Within a few months of the trip, suddenly the warden was gone, a massive heart attack, I believe. There was genuine grieving among the inmate population from everything we're able to see. I think in no small part to their recognition that Ireland was a fair guy. He was approachable. But he had also taken great risk personally for one of their own. And this was not lost on the population.
We only have about 30 seconds left. But what do you think people should take away from this story? I mean, it's fascinating. But what do you want people to learn from it?
The question to me always has been, in my work and in this podcast, can you atone for something as horrendous? How would you atone for something as horrendous as a murder? How do you know that someone has paid their debt, that they've changed fundamentally? Is 30 years of right behavior enough? I don't know. I guess we'll leave that to everyone to decide for themselves.
Steve Wendell, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity.
Steve Wendell, the podcast is From the Gallows to the World Series. It's an audio drama produced for the Voice of Jones County website, and it tells the true story of Harry Hortman and his trip to the World Series. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.